from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Coming up, as U.S. involvement in Afghanistan winds down, military families are being reunited with their loved ones. After the joy of homecoming wears off, they're left to deal with a raft of issues, including changes in family dynamics, physical and mental health challenges, and simply figuring out what comes next now that mom or dad is back home. This hour, as part of Life After War, KQED's special coverage of California veterans, we're examining the impact of military service on vets, their spouses, children, and parents. We'll get started with Forum right after this. And welcome once again to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. This week, more than 100 members of the California National Guard returned home to Stockton after nearly a year of service in Afghanistan. There were plenty of tears of relief and joy, and now those families begin the process of getting on with their life after deployment. This week, KQED is investigating a range of California veterans' issues in Life After War, with coverage on KQED television, radio, and online. And as part of that coverage, this hour on Forum, we're looking at what military families face when they're reunited after a year or more of deployment to Iraq or Afghanistan, the economic, social, physical, and psychological challenges unique to service members, vets, and their loved ones. Joining us, first of all, this hour, Keith Armstrong. He's the Director of Couples and Family Therapy, among other things, at the VA Medical Center in San Francisco. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Scott.
He's also, by the way, co-author of Courage After Fire for Parents of Service Members, Strategies for Coping When Your Son or Daughter Returns from Deployment. Also with me here in the studio, Tracy Novogradic. She's the mother of Lance Corporal Tom Novogradic. He's a Marine who is active duty, currently back from Afghanistan, correct, and is in North Carolina right now as we speak?
That's correct.
Good. And you're also active with Blue Star Moms, which is important as well. Let me begin by asking you, Tracy, what do families do to cope when their loved one is gone? As they're deploying, and then when they're overseas.
Well, probably the number one thing that we do is we pray a lot. We seek support for like-minded people that understand what we're going through.
And that's a good point because, like, unlike past wars, this burden has been borne by a very small number of families, right?
If I'm correct, I think it's, isn't it like 1%?
That's right.
Yeah.
And so what difference does that make, you know, when, as you say, you have to sort of seek out people who understand. It's not just everyone who gets it.
Oh, that's very much so correct. You know, I'm very lucky that I found a great organization called the Blue Star Moms, and I'm a member of that as well. And that was probably my go-to. And I was lucky that I don't know where I heard about it, but I've known about it since I was a child.
Yeah.
But
you have a history of military service in your family?
No, not really. My brother-in-law was a lieutenant colonel for the Marines. And so that's about it.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, in addition to praying and sort of hoping for the best and wanting your loved one to come back safe and sound, what are some of the adjustments that, you know, you as a mom or your, you know, dads make, families generally, what do you have to do to kind of make it work?
Well, I think in general, it's more of an emotional thing. You have to come to terms with that your child is, you know, going to war and
in harm's way.
Right. And so there's, I think, certain psychological steps that you go through in your head. And, you know, when you start speaking out to people, as I said, like-minded people that have been there. And probably the biggest part is accepting it. And then when it starts to happen, you know, taking the emotions as they come, that's about all you can do.
And your son has had how many deployments? One? Just one?
Just one. And that's enough.
And that's enough. But yeah. He may go back, or is now we're winding down our activity there, so he probably won't. What do you think?
Well, I'm not sure. It's what my son signed up to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I support him.
Yeah. Keith Armstrong, let me bring you in. You deal with veterans, so
families.
And their families.
That's right.
So give me a sense of what they go through, especially once the deployment ends or the active duty service ends.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of readjustment that takes place. And, you know, I just want to commend Tracy and her organization on the amount of support that they provide each other, because I think in addition to praying, the social support and the networking that takes place at organizations like the Blue Star Moms is phenomenally helpful, because it really gives moms a chance to sort of check each other, and dads too, to check each other and to say, hey, that actually is not so crazy that you're thinking about that's pretty typical of what we go through. And there are all these things that sometimes you get exposed to as you're waiting.
Like what?
Well, for instance, you may have to talk with your child about certain kinds of paperwork, which has to do with, like creating a will. And you know, this is not the kinds of conversations you typically have with your 18, 19, 20, 25-year-old child. It's just and that conversation brings up, you know, the issue of, oh my God, maybe something bad will happen to him. Maybe he'll or her. Maybe, you know, he'll die. And that's not something that as humans, we do our best to
shield kids from.
Exactly. And shield ourselves from thinking about our children dying. And I think that this is part of the need for accommodation that that folks who are waiting kind of go through. Now, in terms of what veterans go through when they return, I mean, I think it really varies, you know, depending upon the social support network that they're returning to, their age. It's super complicated. But a lot of times people come back feeling a bit disconnected from civilians in general and from the civilian world, that, you know, they may have gone in with particular ideas of careers, of things that they were going to do. And because of their experience in combat, they come back. And sometimes in a good way, not always in a bad way, but they come back saying, you know what, that isn't going to do it for me. I need to do something that is meaningful, like what I did in service. So sometimes it shifts people towards other professions that also, you know, have sort of meaning embedded in them.
Hear about, you know, there's companies like Walmart, for example, that are making a big push to hire veterans, which
is
great.
Right. Yeah, it is great.
But you're saying that for some who have been in the middle of these life-changing experiences, they come back and they decide that's not enough.
Right. That's right.
In terms of the meaning that it gives them.
So you'll see people, and some of this may be due to being connected to, you know, finding work that's also adrenaline producing, which is similar to what combat can sometimes be like. You know, well, people will gravitate towards emergency services positions, firefighting, police. But it could also be, you know, wanting to make a difference in the world, that you know, sometimes I think that this is, you know, there are a lot of problems that people sometimes come back with, but, you know, the majority of people don't come back with problems. But what they've done is that they've served our country, and they can actually teach us as a community how to serve. So, I think it's really important for us to just also underline, and I don't want to at all diminish the some of the issues that people come back with. However, I also want to say is that many people come back with a new skill set that actually can influence where this country goes for the next, you know, 40, 50 years.
That's Keith Armstrong. He's a director of couples and family therapy at the VA Medical Center in San Francisco. Also with us this hour, Tracy Novogradic. She's the mother of Lance Corporal Tom Novogradic, a Marine who is back from Afghanistan, got back last month, is now in North Carolina. And joining us now is Pat Soler. She's national president of Blue Star Mothers of America, and also the mother of Kyle Soler, who's an Army Ranger and Special Forces, who's done 4 tours of duty. Pat Soler, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
You've been listening to our conversation. What would you add to what it is that families and, you know, especially parents, since you're with Blue Star Moms, deal with, especially once their kids come home?
I think the first deployment or the first mid-deployment return is probably the toughest, because moms and dads don't know how to deal with their children who are no longer children. They want to make sure the child has enough space. They don't want to impose, but at the same time, they want to love and hug their child. And many times their child needs lots of sleep. Sometimes they can't adjust to what we consider real food quickly, so they do have digestive problems. And then they want to see their friends. Whether it's their friends from high school or college, they want to reunite. But what happens is when they do, they find that they've grown so much maturity-wise because they have dealt with life and death. And they see their friends who are basically living the same life that they lived in high school or in college.
We'll finish the thought.
I was going to say, it's just this, their expectations that other friends have moved as rapidly as they have.
Yeah.
Aren't real.
And tell us about your son, Kyle. Where is he right now? And 4 tours of duty, that's a lot. How has he changed? And how has the return on each one been different from the previous?
He has served 4 tours, 2 in Iraq, 2 in Afghanistan. His first tour was probably the most difficult because they lost over 51 soldiers. And that was an incredibly high percentage. So he was very much aware of how close and near to death he was. He had been IED'd. And I think when he first came home, he was a little concerned about how the parents would react. And
react to what? To his just being home or the changes in him?
The changes in him and how much information did we want to know about what he had been involved in.
What do you mean by that? Like the details of what he saw and what he did?
Yes, yes. And I was very, very fortunate because he said, guys, do you want to see pictures and talk about what I did? And we said yes, and we spent about 3 hours, and he took us through most of his missions, what he had seen, what he had experienced, and then he turned to us and said, okay, conversation's done. We won't bring this conversation up again. So he took control, but yet was willing to unload in terms of the emotions and the experiences.
Yeah. Let me bring in one other person, one other voice right now. Ben Bowman is a commander with B Company, the 126th General Support Aviation Battalion in the California Army National Guard, who returned from Afghanistan just this week. Ben Bowman, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Scott. Good morning.
Yeah, and first of all, you are fresh back from Afghanistan. What has the transition been like for you so far?
I think we're still on the honeymoon phase since we just got back on Tuesday, doing all the things that we missed while we were gone. Not that I'm speaking for everyone, but just myself, you know, having my favorite meals, favorite alcoholic beverage now that we can do that again, and just enjoying being home and getting back to normal life.
And this is your second deployment, right?
Yes, sir.
How is coming back this time different from the first time? You were deployed, what was it, 2008 the first time?
Yes, it's completely different. And for a lot of different reasons, I think. This deployment, we did 9 straight months in Afghanistan without any breaks to speak of. No R&R, we didn't come home. As opposed to our 08-09 deployment, where we went to Afghanistan and we knew about halfway through we were going to get 15 days at home, and that was a 10-month time in Afghanistan for us.
And just in terms of the experience while you were there, I mean, we hear, of course, that through the news what's happened, but did it seem, in terms of your own experience there, was it very different in terms of personal safety and concerns that you had while in Afghanistan?
Aspect, this deployment for me personally was extremely different from our last one. I think the way that the war is progressing, moving towards all of the base closures and whatnot, and also going from being a platoon leader, which is a leadership position, but then being the commander, the sole guy of 120 soldiers, 2 different locations, 5 different task forces, 18 Chinook helicopters, all of that kind of resting on me. Not that I'm the sole decision maker, but it was very, very different having to make be the final decision, and a lot of very difficult decisions, just trying to keep everyone alive and doing the safest thing possible for the entire unit.
Huge responsibility. And how do you describe, now you're back here and you're not in charge of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been here 48 hours, but what do you anticipate maybe from the last deployment? What's that transition going to be like, and what are the toughest parts of that?
Well, I think I've learned a lot, especially coming back from my second deployment this time. Last deployment, I was very, very ready to get back to flying, wanted to come back to California. Everything was so exciting. And I went back to work, I think, much too early and didn't take any time for myself, time for my family. And this time I'm absolutely going to do that. I already told my boss I'm not going back to work till November. Just taking time to reintegrate with the family, get all those dynamics back together, reinforce our balance together, and you know, just make the most of it, of being back in California.
What are you going to do? What are your like sort of short term? By that I mean like the rest of the year plans.
Oh gosh, I've got so many exciting things planned. Basically, do all my favorite things in California. I got married to my beautiful fiance Lisa about a year ago.
Congratulations!
Thank you. So we are getting married at the end of September down near our family cabin in the Santa Cruz Mountains. So lots to do before the wedding. And head up tomorrow to Lake Tahoe in the Sierras for an open-ended trip. Really just going to do all the great things that Northern California has to offer without having to be at work.
Yeah. And how do you feel your deployments have changed you, if at all?
Gosh, you know, it's hard to be so introspective. I'm sure my family would be able to say how it's changed me more.
What do you think they'd say?
I think being in a leadership position has made me be the fixer. When a problem comes up, I gather all the information, get the recommendations from the subject matter experts that are within the company, such as the warrant officers and all the other pilots, platoon sergeants, and then I'm the person that has to make that final decision. So I kind of fall back into that role, I think, as being the final decision maker, gathering all the information and just doing that, making fixes all the time.
The go-to guy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think now that I'm home after doing that for so long, I have told my fiance and my family, I don't want to make any decisions. You know, you guys make all the decisions for me and we'll roll with it. I'm just going to enjoy hanging out in the Bay Area.
Yeah. Pat Soller, let me bring you back in from Blue Star Mothers. What goes through your mind as you're listening to Ben describe what the first 48 hours back home have been like?
It sounded exactly what my son did and said, exactly.
And now your son has been back much longer, is that correct?
He got back from Afghanistan, similar 10-month deployment in May.
Yeah, and so he's had, not that much of a difference in terms of time, but what do you anticipate, I don't know if advice is the right word because every situation is different, but, you know, what might Ben, especially someone who's about to get married, what are some of the issues that, what are some of the things he should expect?
Well, I think that especially, you know, having a supportive fiance and one who understands commitments in terms of the military, and that oftentimes one does not get to choose when one is deployed or where they go, and that there are going to be situations that may cause flashbacks, and one has to be very, very supportive, and I think make sure that if they see signs that somebody is drinking or somebody is using drugs or is having trouble readjusting, that they encourage them to seek help.
Tracy Novogradic, was that something your son has gone through at all since he's been back? I mean, sort of not necessarily flashbacks, but some of the hypervigilance that comes sometimes from having been in a war zone?
I'm sure that, he was home for the 4th of July.
Here in the Bay Area.
Yes. And, I think the unexpected kind of...
Fireworks and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and just really sudden loud noises. Because in reality, these men and women, when they come back, I believe are still in the war zone for a while.
Definitely a transitional period. We want to open phone lines in the rest of the hour. And if you'd like to join us, give us a call, 866-733-6786. We'd love to especially hear from you if you or a family member were deployed, if you're part of a military family or have friends who are. Talk about what you noticed in their return and what they went through, how they changed, and so on. 866-733-6786 is the number. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org. This is part of our coverage this week on KQED, Life After War. We're examining issues of California veterans, and we would love to hear from you this hour. Let me bring in one more voice now. We've got a full plate here of people, but Gina Rosamond is the wife of National Guardsman Joseph Rosamond, who returned this week also from Afghanistan, his third tour of duty. Is that right, Gina?
That is correct, Scott.
And how's it been?
Wow. It's been interesting. we've had to kind of integrate him back into his role as daddy and as husband. I know yesterday it was interesting because poor guy, I was making lunch and, you know, we talked about just kind of doing what I normally do, keeping my schedule the same and just kind of integrating him back into the family and into the house. And I was cooking lunch and he was searching in the cabinets, and I said, "Honey, what are you looking for?" And he said, I forget where the cups are for water." And so, you know, after a year being gone, that makes total sense to me. Why, you know, you wouldn't know much about where things were placed beforehand.
Hmm.
It's been interesting, but we're definitely coping the best way that we know how.
And this is his third tour. Was his third tour. So, what did you learn in the first two that you think might help you out this time?
Wow. Ben said, that each tour is so different. I've learned so much about myself and the number one thing for me was learning how to keep myself busy and in a positive way. I know, like I said, each deployment has been so different. The first one, my family is from Manteca, so I've gotten a ton of support, a ton of family support, going to my mom's, you know, doing stuff like that, and hanging out with family. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump in, but you have a daughter now too, right?
Yes, yes.
Exactly. How has that changed things?
Oh, man, it's amazing. She, it was hard at first because she did, you know, I did tell her that daddy was going to work, you know, for a long time, and, you know, it was definitely an adjustment because she would ask for daddy or cry for daddy if she fell down or hurt herself. So that was tough to hear. So I think it's definitely been an adjustment for all of us. For me, I really feel like she has grounded me and made it easier for me to be a better role model for her, knowing that I am you know, playing the role of mother and daddy.
Yeah, exactly. So. And that we'll talk a little bit more about that change now that he's back. But stay with us, if you would. We're going to continue this conversation about how military families are coping with the return of a loved one from Afghanistan or Iraq. Again, the number to call if you want to join us, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org or leave a comment on our Facebook page as well. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. This hour we're talking about military families and how they cope when a loved one returns home. It's part of our ongoing coverage this week in a series we're calling Life After War, looking at California veteran issues. And by the way, we'll have more coverage tomorrow morning on the California Report. And then tomorrow night, 7:30, KQED TV Channel 9 is going to have a half-hour special produced in collaboration with the Center for Investigative Reporting. And all that and more can be found at kqednews.com. www.sanfrancisco.org. This hour, we have Keith Armstrong from the San Francisco Medical Center, San Francisco VA Medical Center. Also with me in the studio, Tracy Novogradek, the mother of Lance Corporal Tom Novogradek, a Marine. She lives in San Ramon. Ben Bowman, who just got back from Afghanistan, is in Stockton. Gina Rosamond, wife of National Guardsman Joseph Rosamond, and Pat Soler, who is with Blue Star Moms as well. I'm going to give out that phone number one more time. It's 866-733-6786. And let me just come back to you, Gina, because at the end you were talking about your husband has only been back 48 hours or so. But, you know, while he was gone, you were in charge of the family by necessity. And that's going to have to evolve, I guess you could say. What are your hopes? What are your concerns about that?
You know, the interesting thing is it really feels like having my husband not home for that year, that I kind of had to learn a new way. And, you know, the big thing for me was just really keeping busy and staying focused on the positive and, you know, finding a babysitter to go work out or get out of the house when I needed to, just to take a break for myself. And then, you know, I come back feeling refreshed and ready to, you know, take on the day. But it wasn't always like that. You know, there with the second deployment, it was probably the most like the hardest because I wasn't in that positive place with it. But I, you know, it wasn't until after the deployment was over that I realized how much I could lose. You know, doing the things that I was doing while he was away, which was hanging out with friends, you know, going out and having a few drinks, and that wasn't me. And that's when I had my daughter, I realized that, you know, I don't want to lose my family. That's not, you know, that's not something that I can see for myself. And so for this deployment, I really feel like having my daughter was one of the biggest things that has helped me get through.
Help
and really
you.
Keep busy. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go to the phones now. Ramon is first up in Lake County. Welcome.
Hello there. Can you hear me? There?
Yeah. Go right ahead.
Hi. You know, I work with veterans. I'm a psychologist, but that's not my work. I actually work in veterans' homes and help make them more accessible for veterans with disabilities, from everything from the Persian Gulf War to the Korean War to World War II. I'm in veterans' homes 3-4 times a week, and the one thing I've noticed is that they experience a lot of people interacting with them, but the majority of people are treating them as people with disabilities, whereas they feel themselves and the way they perceive themselves from the point that they leave the service is as soldiers and warriors, and they like to be addressed that way. And there's not a lot of room in our society for understanding what that means for them. I guess I wanted to say that because I feel like it's the reentry process has a lot to do with lack of recognition.
Mm.
And if you are a person with a disability, you are still a soldier with a disability, a warrior with a disability, and that's still how, as a veteran, you perceive yourself.
Yeah, and Keith Armstrong, that's part of the kind of disconnect, isn't it, that people, when you come back, I mean, after World War II, everyone was involved in that effort, not the case in recent wars.
No, that's absolutely true. And Tracy and I were talking about sort of this, about how, just examples of how people don't get it and, you know, equating going off to college with going into the military and, you know, well, I really understand what you're going through from a parent perspective, which, of course, is a great example of not understanding what somebody is going through. And I think returning from deployment, from combat, you know, people, many civilians sort of demonstrate their lack of knowledge by the kinds of questions and the way that they end up interacting. And I don't think it's mean-spirited as much as it is just a lack of information and understanding of what it means to be deployed and to return and what the sacrifices are entailed in doing that, which truly, truly, truly is not well understood by our society.
Yeah. Ramon, thanks so much for the call. Ben Bowman, I know you have to go in just a couple of minutes, but before I let you go, what do you want people to know about you and your service and that transition and how getting back to this idea of how you want to be sort of thought of and treated as someone who's been serving their country?
Well, that's a pretty difficult question, Scott. I think it's so unimaginable for the families to know exactly what is going on in Afghanistan, and particularly for us as a aviation unit flying Chinook helicopters all over Regional Command East. I think the families oftentimes have it harder than the soldiers do, because we know what home is like. We know what our deployment is like. We know what we're doing every day. The families have no clue oftentimes exactly what we're doing, and I think what they imagine is probably worse than what is actually going on, at least in my unit, our unit, with our soldiers out there flying every day. It sounds, what we do sounds so dangerous, but there are so many tactics, techniques, procedures in place so that it is a relatively safe operation. But I think the pressures and the tribulations that the families go through back in California is probably much more difficult than the soldiers can even understand, because we can't relate to it mm-hmm. at all.
Now that you're back, do you want people to ask you how much detail do you want to share with people?
Very good question. I've thought about that a lot. This, like I said, deployment was so different, particularly in the threats that we faced as aviators. And we don't see anything that the infantry soldiers do, the Rangers, the Special Forces guys. We are solely there to support the troops on the ground. That is our only purpose as an aviation unit, to support the ground troops. But I have thought that question to myself many times, and I think I'm going to test the waters with my fiance and family. And we just started talking about it yesterday, and just, you know, see where it takes us. And there are some things that maybe I don't want them to know. But at the same time, I want them to understand what I went through. Some of the horrors, I guess, is the only word I can think of right now, that we had to face, and some of the things that we saw. So I think that's a road we need to cross as it comes down. And I've told all my soldiers, and the leadership above me, as we all recommended, you know, going to therapy, and there's so many services out there available through the VA and other resources that we should take advantage of, because this honeymoon phase, it's going to wear off at some point, and we're going to have to be back normal world, and everyone's going to readjust to us being home, and that's when it gets hard. The 60-day point, the 90-day point, honeymoon phase is over. You're back to real life. Now you're just another civilian in California going to work.
Commander Ben Bowman with the California Army National Guard, thanks for your service. Welcome home, and good luck with your upcoming wedding, too.
Thanks very much, Scott.
All right.
Pleasure to be on.
Yeah, take care. Let's go back to the phones now, and we go to Kyle, who's calling from Chicago. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out the prevalence of post-traumatic stress in culture has been, I guess, highlighted in a very real way. Now, it's important for the people who have it, you know, to be recognized, but there are a lot of us who came back who didn't have any post-traumatic stress problems. And I think that people who don't have exposure to the military have developed a sense that everyone who went to war is going to come back with some sort of mental injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that needs to be highlighted a bit more. Not all of us are going to have problems coming home. And I had a bit of an issue when I came back from my last deployment where I had a sense of real guilt that I wasn't physically or emotionally damaged by my time in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and you were able to adjust and kind of get back to life. You're a veteran now, or you're still active duty?
I'm a veteran.
Yeah. And so that transition for you was relatively easy.
Well, the transition poses challenges regardless of your experience, but I think that my time was a lot easier than some other people's.
Yeah. And you feel a little guilty about that, maybe.
Yeah, sometimes. I was a medic for 8 years, so I saw a lot of people with serious injuries, both physical and psychological. And
Keith Armstrong, what about that point? I mean, obviously PTSD and other traumatic brain injury, other issues are important. But is there a sense or a concern about sort of stigmatizing veterans?
I think so. I think it's the caller's making, I think, a very, very important point, which is the majority of people who serve in combat and return will not end up with long-standing psychiatric problems. I think everybody is going to have adjustment issues. I mean, I don't know if you can be away from your family for a year in a combat zone and not come back with some challenges in adjusting. But approximately 20 to 30% of veterans who served in Iraq or Afghanistan come back with issues such as post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, substance use issues, or some combination of those, in addition to traumatic brain injury. But that's certainly not the majority. And I think that point really needs to be underlined, because I think what happens is in an unpleasant way, the sort of the sexy thing that gets depicted on TV is the, you know, Iraq vet with PTSD. And so that's what gets the airtime. But that isn't who the majority of our, you know, men and women who've served look like.
Yeah. Kyle, thanks for the call, and thanks for your service as well.
Thanks for taking up this issue in a substantive way. I think it's really important.
You bet. Thanks so much. Let's go back to the phones now. And Peter is on the line in San Francisco. Welcome. Peter, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah, go right ahead, Peter. You're on the air. All right. Peter's involved in another conversation. Sorry about that. Again, the number to call if you want to join us here on forum, it's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. We've got some email comments as well. Lauren writes, I'm wondering if your guest, Keith Armstrong, knows of any websites or organizations that help companies hire vets. And she writes, I'm in the diversity working group at my company. I'd love to reach out to vets, but I'm not sure where to look.
There are websites, and I don't have any off the top of my head. If she wants to email me, I can get back to her and give her that information. My email address is keith.armstrong@va.gov, and I'm happy to pass along the information.
Okay, good. Thanks. And then George from San Rafael writes, can you talk about drug use among veterans? We all know Afghanistan is the world's top producer of heroin. That said, heroin use among American soldiers has got to be very high. Exactly how high is it? I'm wondering, is that a mistaken assumption, Keith, or what?
You know, I think that there's always drug use everywhere, you know, but the military does a pretty good job of making sure that, you know, people aren't using drugs by, you know, testing them. You know, there's going to be people that are going to be able to slip through it. I mean, I think prescription drugs is probably more often, you know, if anything is being abused, it's more probably prescription drugs like, you know, amphetamines than I think anything else. But it's not my area of expertise.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to the phones now. And Pam in San Francisco, welcome.
Hi. Gosh, listening, I have response to so many of the other callers. I'd love to be able to say something about what they've said. But first, I'll go with what I first called about. Two things. One is, you know, the veteran community and family community here in California also includes veterans of our allies who are now living here either because of safety reasons or, you know, not just allies in Iraq and Afghanistan, but other countries that we're aligned with who served in combat. And now they're here for work or, you know, whatever, and they're suffering or the families are suffering, and I'm wondering what kind of community services, support systems, resources, et cetera, are available to those families, because I'm sure that they have quite a lot in common with our American warriors and their families. That's one. And two, you know, it's true that many, many, many service members come back perfectly, you know, more or less perfectly fine in terms of mental health. But there's an area that I think is overlooked, and that's how things can resurface even years later we have a family member who served in combat years ago, and or some years ago, and when there was a newborn in the family, the sleepless nights, the lack of sleep, and just the pressures of coping with and taking care of a newborn were such that it triggered a lot of memories of the war, of combat.
So it can come back many.
It made it very difficult to take care of the family. And so also I'm wondering about the importance of other family members like aunts and uncles, grandparents, in terms of taking care of the entire family.
Yeah. Keith Armstrong, do you want to deal with that one?
Sounds like there are two questions. The first one is a really great question, and I don't know of any organization that specifically targets our allies that have immigrated here for services. I would look, I guess, to just community mental health. I know there's an organization called Survivors International that does work with people who have been persecuted in other countries and provide some psychological services. So that's my my response to the first question. The second question, I was a little unclear. I think it was just a little unclear as to what the caller was looking for with the second question.
Pam, go ahead.
Yeah, just in response to both, it's just a pity to me that our, or whether it's the VA or non-governmental agencies like the Blue Star Moms and stuff don't make outreach or aren't available for our ally families. Because they're often going through some of the same stuff, and it could be mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
The other thing was if you could talk about the role and inclusion of not just parents, but grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins in taking care of the entire veteran family.
Sure.
I think that you're making a great point. I mean, this is the reason why we wrote our book for parents of military service members was because, my worry was that when we talk about family, we tend not to think about parents. We tend to think about the veteran and his spouse or her spouse and their children. And what you're suggesting is, it's beyond parents. It, in fact, should include grandparents, aunts, uncles, and a much larger familial community. And I absolutely agree with you that we really need to be reaching out to other members of families. I know organizations such as the Coming Home Project will provide psychological counseling for members of families who may be in very important roles in helping families deal with a deployment. So, for instance, if you have a child and, you have to go to work, it may be that your child of the veteran who's serving is taken care of by an uncle or an aunt or a grandparents, and so the deployment directly impacts those players as well.
Yeah, Tracy Novogradic, anything you want to add about the sort of the family dynamics and support from not just moms, but also grandparents, aunts, uncles? How important is that?
I think it's very important, and I do have some suggestions for our caller. There's the Blue Star Moms. I mean, of course, we're an organization of mothers that have, come together with a common cause, but we are, very, very open, to volunteering, and volunteers coming in because, one of the main things that we do is we do the, care packages and, we're always looking for extra help.
You don't have to be a mom to participate.
No, you don't. And, my recommendation is maybe to find a Blue Star Mom chapter in your area and contact them. And then I had some other suggestions as well. There's another organization called Operation Welcome Home. It's by Diablo Valley Flag Brigade. And they get contacted by our heroes that are coming home, and they make sure that they get a wonderful welcome home. And we always love to have as many people as possible there, and as well as another organization called Warrior Watchers. You don't need a motorcycle for that. You can
sit on the back.
That's you can come in your car, as I say, a cage.
Yeah. All right. Good. Anyway. Well, Pam, hope that's helpful. Thanks. Thanks very much for the call. Let's try to get another call or two in. Let's go to San Jose. And is it Elia?
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. So the reason that my call was to talk about the PTSD issues and how it has affected, you know, the family and how it's affected me as a whole, you know, being a veteran. And the prolongation of the PTSD effect afterwards, as I was getting a lot of veterans unable to obtain any help, and the denial basis of it. I have four tours, and after returning the first time, you know, I had no problem adjusting going back to work. I was working as a peace officer here in the state of California, but I felt the depression. I felt the loneliness and the hopelessness. I hear all those ads about getting help and, you know, getting the treatment that you needed. But it was the need to the camaraderie to go back. So I volunteered to go back. And I didn't realize that I had such depression, such a huge case of PTSD. Mm. And my message for the veterans out there, from my own experience, I mean, I ended up losing my family, you know, my marriage. And now that I'm seeking those benefits, they're not out there. You know, it's a lot of help that they advertise, but to get it, it just takes a long, long time.
Are you saying, Elia, that you tried to get the services and gave up, or what exactly happened?
You know, it's the overlaps. I mean, it's just the feeling. Let's say, for instance, when you are out there, you could be in the front lines or not being in the front lines. You can be just behind what we call it behind the wire. And you have the sense at that point, you're so deep into it that, and a lot of veterans can agree with me on this one, that you feel invincible in there. You feel untouchable. And when you return home, you think about, you know, the things that you saw, the things that happened, you know, the comrade next to you that you are working out with, or just talking about his culture, his family. Me telling the stories about me growing up in Mexico and how my grandparents and my parents brought me up. And then 2 minutes later, the guy's no longer there, and you see him coming back in a baddie bag. Mm. It takes a huge, huge impact on the person, regardless of what your job is in the military. And like I said, many of us return. We think we can adjust right away, but yet 5 years later, we have this feeling of loneliness and emptiness, and when you're trying to reach out for those benefits, seem to disappear.
Yeah, Keith Armstrong, what? I mean, there are several points that Elia is making, but one of them is just because you make a successful transition doesn't mean some of those things aren't going to return later on.
That's right. I think it's. I mean, he's making an excellent point, which is that when you've been exposed to trauma, there can be events that take place later on in your life that reactivate that experience, and in fact can you know, create a real downward spiral for you, which is what it sounds like it's, you know, gone on for him. I would really hope that he would continue to pursue getting the help he deserves, whether it be through the VBA, through receiving some sort of disability benefits, or the psychological help through either the VA mental health care or through the Veterans Readjustment Counseling Centers, that those are available to him. And, you know, and depending upon where he lives,
he's in San Jose.
If he's in San Jose, then, you know, there's the San Jose Vet Center. There's Palo Alto VA there. And so, I mean, and if there are like significant problems, he can email me and I'll see what I can do.
Okay. And just again, it's keith.armstrong@va.gov. You're going to have a lot of email when you get back to work.
That's okay.
Elia, I hope that's helpful and good luck to you.
And you know, just to if any veterans are listening out there or any person in a position that can actually do something, to just there anything they can do in their power to kind of expedite the help, just a simple help of not only, you know, everybody focuses on the psychological effect, but the financial system could be huge. And the rating, you know, for going to a college, I mean, like, I'm trying to go to San Jose State. I started a case at the VA for my, to become a disabled vet, but, you know, I understand there's millions of soldiers or, you know, hundreds of thousands returning, and they're still so busy, but if there's a way they can kind of expedite to give you just one little rating so you can get those benefits.
Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off. We're almost at the end of the hour, and I know Keith wants to jump in. Sorry,
hey, Elia,
sorry to cut you off.
Well, you should talk to Trish Vinatieri or Damian Bramlett, who are on the San Jose State campus providing services through a program called VITAL, the Veterans Integration to Academic Leadership Program. They will definitely be able to help you.
All right. Eli, good luck to you, and hope you reach out for those services. We are at the end of the hour. Pat Soller, a quick final thought from you about what families and parents can do to help vets as they're returning.
I will put a recommendation that they get a hold of Keith's book. It is awesome, and what it does is tell all kinds of family members what to expect and give suggestions of how to deal with a returnee. And the book, he has generously made copies available.
And let me just say, I'll give the name of it. It's Courage After Fire for Parents of Service Members. And I'm very sorry to cut you off, Pat. We are at the end of the hour, but thanks so much for joining us, to you and all of our guests this hour. And as I said, you can hear more of our coverage of California veterans issues as part of Life After War, including tomorrow morning on the California Report, a story I reported on PTSD among World War II and Vietnam vets. And then tomorrow night at 7:30 on KQED TV Channel 9, a half-hour special produced in collaboration with the Center for Investigative Reporting. And you'll find all that and more at kqednews.org. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Vinnie Tong. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks and Chad McClymans. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.